Hey, everybody, and welcome to a brand new bonus episode of the podcast from another world. And so I'm going to keep this one short and sweet as a little intro because they are taking a look at one of my favorite sci-fi movies of all time. So, hey, Dave, why don't you guys take it away?
Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Can you hear me? Over.
I mentioned these other solar systems merely to indicate that life can and does exist on other planets as well as our own.
It sounds like, well, just as though you're describing some form of super carrot.
That's nearly right, Mr. Scott. This carrot, as you call it, constructed an aircraft capable of flying some millions of miles through space.
The world's greatest battle was fought and won today by the human race. Here at the top of the world, a handful of American soldiers and civilians met the first invasion from another planet. And now, before giving you the details of the battle, I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world. Tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the sky.
Welcome to another episode of The Podcast from Another World. We are your hosts. I'm Phantom Dark Dave.
And I'm Julie.
And we're back to talk about a really cool sci-fi horror movie. But before we do that, we got to talk about the last couple episodes we did. So, two episodes ago, you and I talked about Vincent Price.
That was two episodes ago.
Well, that's because we've amplified how many episodes we do. So, two episodes ago, you were on here, and then, you know, one episode, I was on here with Neil. But what feedback did you get on the Vincent Price episode?
I got great feedback. You get most of it, though. I am still slacking in the social media department. I'll do better. But, as always, Jamie Ray gave me a nice little shout-out. I think he's my biggest fan right now. I mean, short of you.
I was going to say. That's awesome, though. But, yeah, no, I got the same love. I knew Jamie Ray loved the episode. A lot of people, shout-out to married people who watch movies. That's a podcast that I have not really checked out, and I hate saying that because I know that he listens to us and he listens to all of Brian's episodes, but I'm gonna put it on the list because I'm always looking for new podcasts. And honestly, even though they're not in the SIP network, they could be because they're a big part of the Podern family, the big podcast community. And I want to see what that's all about. So shout out to them for just being so cool and interacting with us.
Yes, for sure.
You can't go wrong with the Vincent Price episode.
No, you can't. I've learned that.
Are you excited for next year when we do another one?
I am. I'm excited to be on this little journey.
You know, I'm trying to see, like, I was telling Brian a couple of things I wanted to do for Christmas, but he always intends on, I don't know, torturing me every year. It's like an annual enema that I get, and you know, no one looks forward to it, but oddly I do, right? It's a cleaning.
It is a cleaning.
I wonder if he'll ever be able to let us do Great Mouse Detective. That would be a really cool Christmas present, because that's an awesome Disney movie.
But it's not bad, so probably not.
Right, well, it's also not a Christmas movie, but that's okay.
It probably has something Christmas in it somewhere.
I'll find it.
Yeah.
There's red and green.
That's right. Christmas colors.
That's right. Hey, did you ever used to watch a show called The Red Green Show? It came on PBS.
Yes.
Did you? High five.
Yeah.
Wow, I don't think I've ever met anybody that knew what that was.
Yeah, it's been a long time ago.
I bet
ago,
we can YouTube
but...
it. Yeah. It's probably, I wonder if it holds up.
That's a good question. We'll have to find out.
No, no, no. But, you know, last episode, you were out of town, and I was really bored, so I was like, I want a podcast. And so I brought on our good friend Neil, and we got to do a sequel to an episode we already did on Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. We talked about underrated horror films, and then I was like, hey, dude, you want to do an underrated horror films, like a chat too? And he was all about it. And the thing is that episode that we originally recorded was back in 2019.
Wow.
It was one of the final episodes of Dave's Pop Culture Podcast, and it was my number one highest downloaded episode.
That's amazing.
Before I lost being able to see what the numbers were. But that was the last thing I saw.
Yeah.
And it was the first one to finally take down the episode I did with Evan, where we did, oddly enough, the Earth Final Conflict pilot episode. Somehow that thing skyrocketed.
Huh.
Even he and I still twiddle our thumbs like, there's some fans out there of this show. So we might have to revisit that, especially now I got you here. I can just kind of do it again.
True, because I clearly haven't watched it.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's on Tubi.
Or not to me.
But let's get to today, because today we got an awesome one in store for you guys with an awesome guest. We are going to talk about the 1979 sci-fi classic Alien.
Interrupted the course of my journey.
What?
Yeah. He's programmed to do that should certain conditions arise. They have.
It seems she has intercepted a transmission of unknown origin. She got us up to check it out.
What kind of a transmission?
Acoustical beacon to repeats at intervals of 12 seconds.
SOS.
Human.
Unknown.
And joining us for this episode, the final member of the Trek Talk crew, and honestly, one of my favorite people in the world. Welcome to the show. What's up, Randy?
I love you, man. It's good to be here. I appreciate you having me on, as always. I'm trying to even think, like, how many times we've done this now. Not enough, but it's pretty cool, man. We've done it a lot, dude, and it's just like home, man, coming and chatting with you on your podcast, dude. Straight up.
No matter what podcast I'm hosting or what the name is, you'll always be a guest. I'm just sorry it took so long to get you on here, but I do want to throw this at you. I was looking at our Skype history, and it looks like the last time you and I Skyped together was June 27th, 2020, almost a year ago.
Yeah, and like, that would have been the day before I turned 40.
Ooh.
And so that's really weird, dude. Like, we haven't had a Trek talk or anything since then.
Well,
we
the Trek talk was Miri, which was even earlier than that. That was, I think, just one of our group chats.
Oh, my God.
Like a Saturday night thing. Yeah.
You know, man, it, like, last year was so intense for me. Like, the last half of the year was just finishing up school and work, and just everything going on in the world was it was rough, dude, but it's been feeling a lot better lately. You know, we've been getting out and about and doing more, and it's been nice to do that, man.
That's really cool, man. I was listening to some older Trek talks the other day, and on those episodes you were talking about needing to restart school, and now you're telling me you're finishing up certain things. And so I literally, man, people on this show like hear your progression, so that's kudos to you, man.
Oh, well, that's cool. I appreciate that, man. And you know, that's how I know the chemistry and just the fun we have. You know, I've met you in real life, man, and Johnny. Still, I've yet to meet Evan, but I think we're gonna have to get up to Montana to make that happen. But man, I mean, dude, it's been great. I'm so fortunate that I met you all. I mean, it's in a way it sounds sad, but it's not really, because like Twitter has pretty much replaced my social life in a way. I just don't get out and hang out, and my life is not such that it's like super possible right now. But man, I got you guys and some of the people I talk to in the music thing, and that it's every bit as meaningful as any real life air quote friendship could be. So yeah, man. And dude, to just think that, like, you know, I don't remember what year our first Trek talk was, but I'm thinking probably 2017, 2018, maybe. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And that's just crazy, dude. That's the way the years go by, man. But we'll do more. We have more, man.
And we think back about we were having conversations on Twitter back in 2016, early 2017.
Yeah.
And I remember
easy.
I was talking to Randy, and I knew him under one name.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know him as the Here on Mars artist that he is.
Ah.
So then I'm like talking to him there, and then we're having these Star Trek conversations, and I've always been the noob in the Star Trek group that we have, our little
True.
Community.
You've
I've come a long way. Yeah, but... But I learned a lot from these guys, and I remember it dawned on me, one of the first things that he said to me in this in-depth Star Trek conversation was like, dude, you could like Star Trek for a week, or you can like Star Trek for 10 years, but you're a Trekkie no matter what. Like, if you
Aww.
Like it, you like it. You know
That's
what I mean?
Awesome.
And I just took that to heart, and Randy is the reason that I watched and then fell in love with DS9.
Nice.
Like, you know, Julie, yeah, you go ahead. You celebrate. Raise that roof, bro, because so many people love different versions of Star Trek. Most people love all Star Trek. But there was something about DS9
That's
that I
one,
wasn't
baby.
Sure about, you know what I mean? And then I had even, like, kind of watched it, and you're like, dude, I'm telling you, it goes places. You're going to love it. Watch it. And then, so that was kind of like the push and the motivation I needed. And you'll be happy to know that I'm running through it a second time now, showing it to Julie.
Yeah.
And we are actively, we're about to knock out season 2 already.
Yes,
so we're making our way through
2.
It.
Oh, man. Oh, man. So it's just about to get.
See? I know.
Yeah, it's about to get dope, dude. Like, you know, it's funny. And it's just like, you know, for anybody who didn't listen to any of those episodes, like, I didn't even like DS9 when it came out. Like, I was used to Picard and Next Generation, and DS9's such a different vibe, and I didn't like it. And so I didn't watch it. And it wasn't until we had Netflix and time, you know, no kids, we had, and then I was like, all right, let's give this a shot. And yeah, I don't know, something happened, something clicked, and it was just like, this is one of the greatest television shows that's ever been made. For me, personally.
Well, it's definitely a darker tone, and even though all of Star Trek is definitely intelligent, there's something crazy sophisticated about DS9, and I think that might be harder for younger people or children to really appreciate, where, you
True.
know, Next Generation and Voyager, they're very flashy. right? And then DS9 is far from that.
Oh, yeah.
And DS9 is almost like, this sounds kind of funny, Sam, but it's like a soap opera, you know? It was described as Casablanca in space, and being that that's my favorite movie, that's totally what it is. That makes sense. I think that's why it eventually resonated with me, but I think when you go through certain things in life and you're able to read people that watching that show, you're more interested in character development and plot lines and stuff than the oohs and ahs. But then again, it does have the space porn, which is what we love when we get to stare at spaceships all day.
True.
Yeah, very, for sure, man. And, you know, that's definitely a timely topic with what we're talking about tonight. I just love space, dude. 100%, man. I mean, if it's set in space, odds are I'm gonna dig it. I'm gonna find something about it that I just love, because it's just space is escape for me, and that's what entertainment should be for me, is always is just escape, and that's where it's at, baby. So yeah, you know.
So whenever I met you in real life and we were hanging out with our brother Andy, remember that movie we watched that night, Microwave Massacre?
Ha! Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if they would do it. Don't worry, it's coming.
I was like, what in the world?
Oh, yeah. She hasn't gone that route yet.
No.
Oh, goodness. But no, dude, I was just Microwave Massacre in space. Think about it. This could happen. We could call it like Replicator Massacre.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Replicator Massacre. And I'm surprised they've never done... I can't think of any Star Trek episode where, like, the replicators started fritzing out and something bad happened. That's like a whole new angle they could explore, you know?
Since you say that, there has been an episode. I can't remember which show it was on, but even then, you know, it still was to an extent. They didn't take it as far as it could go, but it was definitely something with the replicators, yeah.
Yeah, I remember stuff like malfunctioning. Like, I think somebody wanted to get a cup of coffee and it was like thick as tar or something like that.
That's what I'm thinking, So,
yeah, space and horror is the absolute sci-fi space mixed with horror. It doesn't get any better than that for me. It really doesn't. Like, that's why I'm such a huge 40K fan. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but it's total space and Lovecrafty horror, and it's just perfect because space is terrifying.
It is, and that's actually why you're the guest on this episode, is because when it boils down to kind of the perfect blend of sci-fi and horror, this was the first movie that came to my mind, and so that's why you got the invite. It's just because I asked Randy. It's like I'm dying to get you on the show. It's been too long. Before on Dave's Pop Culture Podcast, it was really easy. It's like, Randy, I don't know, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about Beavis and Butthead. Let's talk about Rob Zombie. It was simple. It's like, well, I'm trying, right? I'm doing the to keep this theme going, and then now we're just mixing it up. But there was a common denominator. It's like, okay, you know, not to a lot of people, 1979 is old. Now, not to me, because I still watch stuff from the 20s and 30s, but it definitely falls in the realm of classic.
Yes.
And this is basically... Yeah. This is a franchise that I definitely want to get into. So I already told you the other day, we need to watch all of these again and go ahead and podcast about them. So we'll get various guests in here, but we had to get Randy on the first one because, man, he's the man for extreme sci-fi horror.
I'm so glad you did, because I don't know if I ever would have watched it. My son is more, I mean, he's only 8. He hasn't watched any of these, but, you know, just seeing different YouTube videos, and it's made its way into pop culture now. So he's aware of what it is. Like, we bought a Lego one from Walmart, and he built it, and it's freaking cool, dude. I'll send you a picture of it. But he built it, and he knows what they are, and he draws them and stuff. And so maybe someday, because of that, I might have watched it. But if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't have watched it. I'm so glad I did, because it was so badass.
That's awesome. That makes me really happy, because that's what I told Julie. Yeah. That's like the point of the podcast, is to get people exposed to this kind of stuff.
Yep.
I heard you say it on the Vincent Price episode.
Yeah, you did.
You said that exact same thing. Yeah, it's like, yeah. And that's exactly what I thought. I'm like, shit, if it wasn't for this, I probably wouldn't have watched it. Because we'll get into it anyway. But
so before we dive into the specifics, I gotta start off with my favorite question to ask everybody. So you love sci-fi, but let's get specific. Do you prefer sci-fi where we travel to other planets and we explore or possibly invade, or do you prefer where we're guarding our home base and aliens come to Earth?
Generally, I would definitely say, in keeping kind of with what I was saying before, I would generally say I like it when it's out there. But that's not to say that if a movie involving like an alien invasion is well done, and it's like, you know, the action is like badass, or like the design of the aliens is like badass and like super like mysterious and eerie, that's what it's all about to me. So it's not a strong preference, but by default I would probably say usually out there, because I like out there, you know, I like the escape,
yeah.
You know, from Earth.
Yeah, there's a lot of more things you can do, at least to my mind, when you're exploring, because it's we don't know what it looks like.
That's
so
true.
Who's to say it's wrong? You can do whatever you want. Where here,
yeah.
Neil said it once. He's like, you know, we've seen Paris and France. We know what, you know, the San Francisco, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge broken looks like, all these things. But even still to this day, movies like Independence Day, you know, Battle for Los Angeles, stuff like destroying here, it gets intense. And so I'm with you, Randy, but
yeah.
I think it's very close. It's like a 60-40, 60 being the adventure to explore.
Probably the best perfect example of like badassery I can think about is the Independence Day, when they take Brent Spiner's corpse and pound it up against the glass window and it's like talking like this. Like, dude, that's terrifying, man. When I watched that, I was like, holy shit, that's crazy, you know?
You know, speaking of that, I remember I saw Independence Day in theater twice, and at that time I wasn't a Trekkie, but I remember being in theater and people got really excited when his character popped up. People were like, that's Data. And at the time, yeah, I knew, oh, that Star Trek character. But now, you know, you're like Brent Spiner,
sure.
And I'm like, that's Data. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But I gotta say,
yeah,
man, we'll get into it a little more, but I even feel like Independence Day, the design of those aliens, definitely took a page out of the Alien book.
100%. 100%, man. And another thing that, as you were talking just now, that I thought of, another one, probably the best, like, if it's just strictly battling aliens, I love Starship Troopers, dude. I love that movie, man. Plus all the, like, how do I put it? Just the propaganda stuff that it's talking. That movie is so intelligent, dude. It's ridiculous.
One that definitely has a cult following, and I think it's growing over time, because it even had a few sequels. But for, you know, Julie's like, what are you talking about?
I know.
Well,
I'm representing all those who haven't seen any of
it. Well, the cool thing, Brian just covered it a couple of months ago.
Hey.
Like, literally, that if you're interested in that, it's on the Terrible Turn. Yeah,
I'll check it out
a couple
yeah.
times, and it's a great episode. But even listening to that episode, it made me want to watch the movie again because of everything he said. Like, it looks amazing.
Nice.
And it's one of those that's like so bad it's good. It's corny,
oh, no.
And it no, but Hollywood level. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
But it's like, but it's weird because like if you watch it and if you watch go back and like watch RoboCop or you know Total Recall. You know, when we came out of the 80s and 90s, we were thinking, oh, those movies are so, like, cheesy and just, they're just awful. But now, when you go back and watch them, you're like, that was actually, like, really smart. It's, like, tongue-in-cheek, but it's so deep. You know what I mean? And Starship Troopers is one of those. It's crazy. It's got a lot of stuff in it just about, like, you know, what would happen if the world was under this, like, hardcore, like, technocratic government, maybe, if that's the right word for it. It's really deep. It's way smarter than I am, but I at least recognize that it's really
smart.
Let me
ask you a question.
You know?
Is there a reason why you name-dropped those two movies specifically, RoboCop and Total Recall? Was it just like 80s movies, or...?
Well, so, I guess those are my two favorite. If I had to think of what strictly landed in the 80s, like, as far as, like, action-type flicks but still had that sci-fi vibe, it would be those two. I like the first Terminator, but it didn't like, appeal to me. And, you know, Terminator 2 would be the other one that I would throw in with those two. But if I had to pick, like, any three 80s/early 90s action movies, it would be RoboCop, Total Recall, and probably Terminator 2, which all have that sci-fi element. Don't get me wrong, I love the action, and I love Commando. I love, like, you know, all that.
Well, before you make this less awesome, because you're taking it in a direction that I can't impress you anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Had you had not said all of that, and you just said those two movies again, I just wanted your head to explode when I tell you the irony that Starship Troopers, RoboCop, and Total Recall were all directed by the same guy.
Oh, I didn't know he did RoboCop. I knew he did Total Recall and Starship Troopers, but I did not know he did. But that's so crazy because, like, dude, you can feel a common thread in those movies. I don't know if it's just the way he shoots movies or the way that they cut the movie together. I don't know what it is, but, like, definitely with Starship Troopers and Total Recall, I can feel, like, a common, like, approach or something when I watch the movie. I don't know what it is that I'm picking up on, but it's like a vibe. You know what I mean? It's the music. It's the just kind of the cheesy, the way everything looks or something. I don't
know.
That's
cool, man.
But that's crazy.
Yeah,
Andy did RoboCop. That's fucking insane, dude.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, he did some other stuff, but actually, Brian covered all of those. He did a Paul Verhoeven month.
Oh, wow.
Where he did all those. Oh, he did Hollow Man, too, Kevin Bacon.
Oh,
yeah.
I want to see that.
Haven't seen that. Is that one of his movies,
that's him, too? Yeah,
no,
that one was like 2002, right around that time.
Yeah, I knew it was a little more recent, but that's cool, man. That's really cool.
Well, let's get back to Alien. And I like to piggyback off of that other question with my other favorite question, which is first-time watches, right? I love to take a trip down memory lane. And so, Randy, since you're the guest, I'll have you go first. But tell us, what can you remember about maybe the first time or your first exposure to this movie?
I'm sure this movie was on because, you know, once I got to be like 11 or 12 – we would go to the store and, you know, we would rent a movie on Friday or Saturday nights when we were staying at a friend's house or vice versa. And I'm sure this one was involved at some point. I don't have any specific recollection of this one. I would say what I do specifically remember, like just snapshots in my head that are left over from, you know, whatever's made it this far, I would have to say it's probably Aliens, because I remember Vasquez, you're like in the second movie, I remember being like, whoa, that chick is tough, you know.
Yeah.
like even tougher than Ripley, right? But no, like I think it was Aliens that I saw first. But the thing is I love horror and I love sci-fi, but the creepy crawly stuff was hard for me as a kid. Literally, you know, all those critter flicks in like Critters and Ghoulies and like, oh man, I mean, Gremlins, all of those movies, they would really mess with my head because I would watch it and then I would try to go to bed at night and I was scared that like they were under the covers, like at the foot of my bed. So I'd sleep sideways because I didn't want, like I couldn't. Or I just wouldn't sleep with a blanket at all, dude, because it would just mess with me. So anything around the creatures and critters and creepy crawly things, like I just never, I didn't gravitate towards that. So it occurred to me as I was watching this, it's like, I don't think I have ever actually watched this. I've seen some of the iconic scenes, you know, that I'm sure we're going to talk about. Like, oh, I know which ones you're going to bring up too, but I've seen some of those, but had never actually watched this movie. And so it was so freaking cool it was like seeing it for the first time, because it may actually have been.
Yeah. I think that's going to be close to your story, isn't it?
It is, because I, going into this, I'm like, oh yes, I saw this one as a kid. I'm pretty sure I saw it. Don't remember much. It's been a long time, but I know I've seen it. And then we watched it last night, and I realized I don't think I have seen this one. And I think I'm kind of like Randy. I think it was Aliens that I probably saw that I'm thinking of. And so I'm curious to watch Aliens and go back and see. But first time watch, I think, was last night for me. So
legit.
Yeah.
Another reason why I do this podcast now.
Exactly.
To show you cool shit.
Because I haven't really watched any movies, and so I'm catching up on things.
So I remember growing up, this was a VHS tape that my neighbors had, but it never was on. They would always seem to watch the second and third one. And I don't know why that is, but I know a lot of people, when they go into kind of describing this franchise, the first one is the only one that's really identified as a horror movie, mm-hmm. and it's often called, like, the haunted house movie, you know, because you're, like, trapped on the ship and it's things are popping out. And then right. this movie only has one alien in it, which I think for anybody who goes into it kind of blind, they're like, I thought there was going to be, you know, something different going on. That's hence where you get the sequel. But the sequel stands out so much because it was definitely more... It had the James Cameron, you know, the Terminator 2 treatment, where it took the idea and it threw the flavor on there, where now it's a lot more interactive. It's got the quipped lines with it. It's fun. Kids are quoting it. You got Bill Paxton, game over, man. I mean, it's awesome, right? And then you got the almost the mech warrior looking stuff, but we'll get into that another day. But all that stuff was iconic. So for me, my first watch was actually, it's one of our favorite numbers. It was 17 years ago. In 2004, AMC brought it to theater for its 25th anniversary. So my first experience was on the big screen in theater.
Wow.
Which
Hell
was
yeah,
legit.
That's badass.
Yes, it was awesome. Yeah. You know, there wasn't 3D, it wasn't IMAX, nothing. It was just straightforward, but the surround sound was there, and it was really cool. And I went into that movie only knowing what somebody who reads a VHS cover knows, right?
Oh, wow.
So watching it last night was another thing I wanted to do. You know, I wanted mm-hmm. to dive back into the series. I needed to remind myself, but I knew that I didn't have much memory of it 17 years ago. There was going to be things that I couldn't... I remember telling you there was only one thing I remembered.
That is true,
and
that's rare for you.
That's going to be my favorite scene, and we'll talk about it in a few. But yeah, for me, you know, I saw it in theater 17 years ago for its anniversary. We watched it last night on VHS. We kept
yeah,
it real.
We did.
And man, it was a great mm-hmm. time.
I saw that.
And honestly, dude, it got me just like you. I'm really excited to dive into the sequels and stuff. So.
Oh yeah, like I'm gonna go buy them this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Dude. Like at least two and three. At least two and three for sure. I know I'll watch the other ones because they're so divisive. And all the stuff I've seen of like the ones that have come out in the last 10-ish years, it looks really cool. You know what I mean? And the reasons that so many people tear apart and critique movies, I'm just usually like, whatever. Yeah. Like, it looks cool. I like it. You know what I mean?
Well, do yourself a favor. Pick up 2, 3, and 4 because those are all the 90s version. I think the fourth one was like late 90s and... I enjoyed that one, and so, yeah, that's before you get to like Prometheus and everything. You gotta do the original Quadrilogy.
Yeah.
But
sure.
Cool, man. So you know this movie, it has one of my favorite things, and that's simplicity. Anybody can figure out what this movie's
for
about
sure.
Getting 10 minutes into it. It's basically it takes place in outer space, and we spend most of our time on the spaceship Nostromo, which not a huge fan of spaceship name because it's kind of hard to say. It does not roll off the tongue. I always want to say Nostradamus
oh,
when I look
yeah.
at it, and then I call myself a Nostradumbass because I can't get it right.
Oh, no.
But this is like a giant scary Star Trek episode because our crew is on their way home. They wake up halfway through their journey to what they realize or assume is a distress call, and they just have to go to this planet and see what's going on, and that's when the fun starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, dude, like, so much about just those first shots is, I love it. It, like, and it blows me away that it's so old. You know what I mean? I watched this 79 theatrical cut. I had the option of the director's cut. I did not watch the director's cut. I watched it. Yes. And so, and I mean, it still looked like it had that grainy classic film look. And in spite of that, dude, like, I don't know how they did it, but they just pulled off making the dark, dreary, desolate vacuum of space look as menacing and as evil as they possibly could without doing any scary architecture or like, you know, like creepy music. It felt very accurate to me. You know what I mean? It looks like a freighter. It looks like the type of like just hunk of junk that, you know, will haul all that, whatever it is they're hauling through space. They're like a bunch of truckers, kind of. It's perfect, man. They knocked it out of the park, dude. Just in the first few scenes before they even wake up, man.
Yeah, you remember when the movie opens up, there's a whole bunch of shots of really the interior and the exterior, but the interior of the ship, you see the computers like booting on, the AI system's name's Mother. And I know right away at that point, like, I get the goosebumps because our brother Evan and I have always been on the same page. You cannot beat 70s sci-fi. Like, you can't do it.
I guess not, dude. And the first Star Wars movie, and I'm trying to think if there's any other 70s sci-fi that I'm familiar with, but it really does have a vibe that can't be captured. I don't think you could capture that authentically nowadays. Like, maybe if you had the same cameras and all the same old yellowed-looking stuff. I don't know, man.
It's funny you say that, too, because I'll tell you the solve for it, and everybody out there is like, preach, because they know what I'm about to say. I say it almost every episode. If you stop doing the CGI stuff and you go back to the practical, like the set design, nothing else makes you feel there than when it's something created by hand.
Yes. And I realized that recently when I watched the special, Harrison Smith's movie, all practical effects, and it was just different, man. And you're right. And that's the same thing with this movie. It's so well done, dude. It's disturbing. You know. We'll go into the effects.
We got our own segment for that. But now I'm gonna look at you. Like, you know, we talk about the opening and how cool it looks and everything. So we always have this ongoing debate about what posters we're going to put in our living room, because the way our living room is designed, there's only one good spot for two posters. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, you pick one, I pick one. And we both agreed that we wanted them to be sci-fi. You know, we have to keep it kind of family appropriate, okay, because the kiddos are here on weekends and stuff. So we're like, okay, almost anything sci-fi will work, because the posters usually ain't too bad. And so we both were even saying, let's do Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Like, there's 13 movies, there's all the series, we could find something. And one thing I learned about Julie is that she is not a big fan of, like, giant heads on posters.
I'm not.
You know, okay. Where I am opposite of that, I actually prefer that more profile look of, like, you know, the original motion picture.
Which is what it's what you get with Star Trek, right? If I'm not mistaken, you get, like, their faces,
for the most part,
right?
Yes.
yeah, I thought so.
And
okay.
I realized that when she told me that, because everything she was looking at were more of spaceships and stuff. And she's like, I really like the aesthetics of spaceships, and that's why I'm looking at you when I'm talking, like, what did you think? Because you put a big deal on this. What did you think of the exterior look of these ships? I mean, from the ship they were on to the alien freighter we discovered.
I like them a lot, of course. I appreciated how realistic they made them look. It wasn't too flashy or too over the top. It was very
DS9. I mean,
yes, kind of DS9-ish and
dingy.
Yes,
dingy,
yeah.
Like just kind of
downtown,
you know,
Dallas.
Like,
wait, what?
It just they keep it running type of look, like a semi truck.
Yeah.
You know, like just a nasty semi truck hauling stuff through space.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. I would like to go back and probably watch those opening scenes a couple more times, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, and see, I was getting a lot of Silent Running vibes from it, because the way they filmed Silent Running was on a, what do you call those? Like an ocean liner carrier, the Navy and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, thank you. Yes, aircraft carrier. I was going to say that, and I was like, aircraft is the water, but that's where they land. But basically, it was like being trapped in a submarine. And that's kind of the look you had on this spaceship, is you felt like you were
100%.
You were claustrophobic, right?
Yes,
like, even the air ducts
close.
In this movie, when they were traveling through air ducts, I was getting anxiety.
Right.
Like, when one of our characters volunteers to go in the air ducts and chase an alien with fire, I was like, that's not me, bro. No.
You're true.
Yeah. And his name was Dallas. And guess where we live? I'm just saying.
Just saying.
That's true. You're not wrong.
Thank you. But, you know, we talk about the looks of the spaceships and everything, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but Randy, the look of the alien, man, what do you think?
You know, man, I mean, I like anything H.R. Giger does, like, period. I mean, so it just has, I mean, obviously he designed it. It 100% has his look. It looks like an evolved machine that's made for murder. That's what it looks like. I mean, I think I was astounded by the fact that, yeah, that's awesome, and it's like the centerpiece of the whole movie, but just everything around it was equally as awesome too. I like the elongated head design that the alien has, and I like the look of like almost like metallic like hose that it has like going around its body and in its like rib cage and stuff like that. It's like some of the most sinister looking like monster type creature you can imagine. I don't know how you make anything scarier looking than that.
I agree with you, and I usually am the one that I'm very picky about how my aliens look, and I think though that the alien in Alien is probably the one that I compare all of the others to. It's kind of that
it sets the standard
of all the other movies. So I kind of compare back to that because I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
It's scary, but...
Well, it is because, again, it's practical, but
yes.
I've always said in my monster movies, which anybody who can see, I'm a big fan of old school monster movies, is because I love the guy in a suit. And so when they went and found this actor, who originally they weren't sure they could find a person. They weren't even going to do that. They were going to rely on animatronics and puppeteers. But I remember they saw this actor named Balaji, who, man, he was like well over 7 feet tall. And wow. So they're like, the way that his arms were like elongated and he was skinny and stuff. I mean, we've seen there's a few actors nowadays who are on the Conjuring movies and they play all the like creepy and like the Ring and stuff. Like that look works. It's scary, right? Because it's abnormal to most, you know. But I think having a person play that role, and they even took the guy who played the Xenomorph and they had him go to mime school and stuff like that to learn how to kind of slow down his movements, you know,
to
not be like a person in a suit, but more like be crafty with what he does, you know, almost have this presence that just felt far more sophisticated than what we are. And honestly, it pulls off for me. So anytime we get down to basics, we do practical effects, you know, we put the person in a makeup chair for 7 hours, you always get 2 thumbs up from me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think they do it just right in capitalizing on showing just enough of the alien, but not, you know what I mean? Of course, later movies, you know, you get a much better view of what the alien looks like, but the lighting that they use, and I'm sure that some of that was intentional because they wanted it, you know, it adds to the, if they were to just show the whole thing, it might not look as scary,
I guess,
if that makes sense. Or it might not look as convincing. It might, well, I don't know. But it looks, the way they did it, coming down behind the dude, having it barely in focus, I mean, showing just a little piece of it, you know, at a time. Oh, it was great, man. Freaky.
Well, yeah, that's 4 years before this movie came out. Jaws was the first summer blockbuster, and the secret was, you know, they had a shark that didn't always work, so they couldn't show the shark all the time. So that actually worked out in the movie's benefit, where anybody who's seen Jaws knows that they only show you small clips, and you don't even see the shark in full till well into, like, an hour into the movie, much like this. We don't even get exposed to the xenomorph or get our first kill until an hour into the film. So a lot of times, less is more, and I think it works in the benefit. Two things you said are right. One, about, you know, maybe they showed it less so it would be more creepy. Yes, but also, I think the same reason why movies filmed in black and white still hold up is a lot of times in the shadows and in the darkness, when you can't see how something is made or whatever, it leaves more to your nightmare, your imagination, and it really works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it reminds me of like some of the scariest movies to me. They'll show you just a flash of something and you think you saw something that was absolutely awful. And then, yeah, like Event Horizon is a movie that was like that for me. That was one of the most terrifying movies for me of all time on VHS. I would try to stop it just on these little like frames where it would show you just this absolutely hellish nightmare of an image. And then later when it comes out on DVD, you know, you slow it all down and it looks like a high dollar food fight. You know what I mean? It's just not the same, dude. But you know what's funny is while I was preparing and I was, you know, just kind of doing some review, I found a YouTube video that was like every Xenomorph scene from Alien, and it was only 3.5 minutes yep. long, dude.
Really?
That's all the longer, that's all the more you see of the alien. You know what
wow.
I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah, man, hour and a half movie. No, almost 2 hour movie.
Uh-huh.
And there's really only 4 minutes of screen time of
the
actual alien.
It does not feel...
That's because they chop it up. It's just like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, hour and a half movie. Freddy Krueger's got like 7 minutes of screen time.
Wow.
So, but no.
Oh, that's
got to give props, man. Yeah. Derek Van Lint was the director of photography on this movie, and this was actually his first major motion picture
oh,
that
wow.
he did photography. So when you talk about being able to see like the eight, like get, you know, let's crouch down and film up, and then, you know, and you got to give credit to the director of the movie too,
yeah.
right? But just being able to get behind a lens, knowing this is what the audience sees, wouldn't it be more creepy if we do it like this? Because anybody mm-hmm. can hold a camera straight on.
Sure.
Trust me, I've made bad short films. I know that where the camera's positioned actually matters.
Yeah.
But creative angles and then the atmosphere, it just creates for a really scary place.
Mm.
But
they did good.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're gushing over it. I feel like it's really easy for us to talk about overall, like, special effects. So, Randy, I mean, we talk about looks of the ships, looks of the aliens, death scenes. What stands out to you, man?
I'm almost more terrified of the face hugger
right?
than I am the xenomorph. You know what I mean? That, I mean, first of all, the egg, absolutely disgusting. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nasty. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, John Hurt, when you've got your face down in the freaking thing and, you know, it opens up and it just looks like raw meat. And I'm like, how, what on earth are you, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, you see this thing like wriggling around inside. And then, yeah, the face huggers in general, I find absolutely horrifying. I would almost rather be run through by the xenomorph and its spiky tail and whatever comes out of its mouth. Yeah, I'd rather that thing punch me through the chest than to get clamped on by a face hugger, you know, and go
and get
impregnated.
That.
Just
right
in my misery. Yeah, in my misery, you know, save me from the face hugger. I don't know what it is, what they did to make it happen. I'm sure like they had to like get creative with the camera shots, but like, you know, like when they try to get in on it and it zeroes in on his neck and you see the tail just go, you know, like. Oh, yeah, man. The way that they did the effects is fantastic. Probably what people would think is the most basic looking is the chest burster mm-hmm. scene. Because it does. It kind of looks like a little puppet when it pops out of there. But honestly, it's so gory and nasty. And you can hear the heart thumping. And you can see John Hurt's like just splashing blood behind this fucking chest burster.
Yes.
After it pops out, I'm like, dude!
Right all over the dinner.
Yeah, you could not have done that any better,
yeah.
You know? I don't have anything negative to say about any of it.
I agree. I mean, there was nothing... I think for me, the best part about it is that nothing stood out as being too fake or cheesy. It was really well done, and so... the fact that I can't really pick out anything where I'm like, maybe, or, like, it was...
So you're like, what he said, times two.
Times two.
All right.
I agree with Randy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man, with the effects. I mean, we talked about how good the ships look. We talked about, you know, the atmosphere. And the scenes in the movie aren't super graphic. You know, when you go into Alien, you know it's a horror, it's rated R, you know, these things. You think you're going to get some... pretty intense stuff, but you gotta remember 1979, you know, we didn't even have the splatter 80s horror movies yet, so
yeah.
Just that scene of the chest burster and the blood squirt, now like that was a lot for people, and I like how we pointed it out too, because you talked about like you couldn't have done it any better. A lot of the crew members, when that happened, they didn't even know to what like amount or extent that blood was coming out, so a lot of the reactions were authentic.
Right.
And I'm so glad that Ridley Scott kept that in there.
Yes.
So
agree.
I think it's less the effects that make that movie scary and more just the tension that they maintain throughout the entire movie. It never lets up on just how dire and tense and just desolate and lonely and dangerous everything is. You know what I mean? Like, the effects are just like the little, like, sprinkles, you know? Like the all the alien shots and everything. It just feels like the perfect, like, cherry on top.
Well, yeah, because, you know, if you take the alien out, you only lose 4 minutes of the film.
Oh, no.
Exactly. That is true. But they did, and we haven't even talked about, like, when they get down, probably the thing that jumped out to me first that I was just like, whoa, was when they land on the planet and they suit up and they start walking. And it shows the feed from their helmet cameras when they're walking up and see the alien ship, dude. And it's like cutting in and out and it's all garbled and their voices are getting all like, you know, like, dude, it's, that is like some of the most terrifying shit I've ever seen. Just that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, forget the alien, you know, like, just the visuals, dude, are frightening, you know?
Yeah.
What would you think if you walked into that ship and you've got this skeletonized, like, whatever the hell that was. Was that the pilot?
That was Skeletor from He-Man.
Skeletor?
No.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've got something entirely apart from the alien, the facehugger, chestburster that everyone associates with it. Just the visuals, man. Brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal. And I love the aesthetics of that, like, unknown planet. They did such a good job of taking us to another world that I felt like we were there.
Oh, yeah.
And like Randy said, like, they get knee-deep in almost like, it felt like a swamp to me. And already I'm like, there's water, I'm out. That's a no. But Randy, you know, the reason I bring up the special effects tonight is, yes, it's a reoccurring question on here, but I have one for you is, do you know... or can you guess what sci-fi movie came out the same year as Alien, but lost to Alien, where Alien took home the award for the visual effects?
Was it the motion picture?
It was the motion picture. Star Trek,
I guessed it, man. I was like 79, the motion picture.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what, though? You know, I ain't even mad about it, dude. Like, dude, I can't believe how much I liked this movie. I almost feel like I sound like it's like, whoa, Randy, you haven't sounded this excited, like, talking about much of anything. I was just so – I could not believe it.
Well, see, this is what happens when you come on the podcast, you know. Yeah. We excite. That's why you should come on more.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm pissed that I have to wait probably, like, 5 or 6 years before I can show it to my son. You know what I mean? He wouldn't want
to. I was going to say, at least your son might watch it. My son tells me every day that he's not into horror, and I have to deal with that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's all good, man. But,
something.
Hey, it's okay. He's still my favorite. I love him. But, you know, talking about favorites, we got to talk about characters.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know I prompt you for this one so much, Randy, but let's go, you know, sometimes some of the best answers are top of your head. Out of everybody in this movie, did you have a favorite character?
I mean, I like Ripley, period, because I feel like she's one of those characters that you can look back. I'm like, dude, this movie's 42 years old, and you have that in a movie. You know what I mean? You can't tell me that this hasn't been done for a while. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to, like, you know, you hear a lot about, like, strong women in movies and stuff, and I'm like, dude, what are you – look at her, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so she's one of my favorites because she contradicts like a lot of things. Like, I feel like we hear, it's also like why I like Star Trek. But I didn't realize that Yaphet mm-hmm. Kotto, Kotto, that's the guy who was in The Running Man too. And I only realized that because I recognize that name. You know what I mean? So I like his character. I thought him and the other knuckle dragger dude, you know, from the
guy wearing the hat all the time.
Yeah.
Smoking his cigarettes, like, right. And saying, right.
Yeah, right. No, those two, I really like those two, and Ripley. I mean, I wish those two didn't have to go, to be honest with you. I mean, I felt like they could have, like, you know, could have had a kind of a thing going throughout the other movies. I get it.
Well, you know, the way that the series is going, we're getting prequels. Maybe we'll get back to them, right?
Right.
Even though sometimes
that would be awesome.
Different actors, but okay. How about you? Favorite character?
Well, obviously, Jones, the cat.
Oh, Jonesy. Jones.
I don't think that counts too much. That's my favorite.
Man, I feel bad that I didn't pick that. I mean, I can change my answer, but you won't know. So.
But then after that, obviously, Ripley. I always gravitate towards that leading female role. And so I kind of, you know, second Randy on that one. But I was also very intrigued by Ash.
Oh, yeah.
And I always am kind of drawn to the non-humanoid...
I was about to say, Data? Oh, no, Ash.
...characters. And so, I know. And so, even though he was kind of evil and not really...
Hey, he was just working for the man.
He was.
He was built by the man.
For sure. I just liked... I kind of drew to him in a sense. So...
You're such a nerd.
I am.
I love you.
So well done, though, yeah. Because I know people who are, like, super cold and analytical like that, but then you're still surprised when you find out he's a robot.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And but you go back and you're like, okay, that makes total mm-hmm. sense, but I still know people like that.
Right?
And I almost want to tear their heads off, you know? No, I'm
kidding. What about you?
I got two favorite characters. One is the Xenomorph, right?
Oh, of course.
Just okay. So fucking cool, I want to know what's going on in his mentality, you know? Like, well, he's... Yeah, right. But, no, actually, my all-time favorite character, I agree with you, Dennis Parker in this movie. You know, Yaphet Kotto, man. So, we actually... It's sad. We just lost him a couple months ago. I feel like that always seems to happen when I bring it up, but he...
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he literally just passed a couple months ago, but he lived a very long life. He was in his 80s. But the horror community, you know, we all know him from Freddy's Dead. He was actually in Freddy's Dead. So it's kind of cool. But, man, when I look at his character, he didn't take no shit from nobody. I'm a lot like that. And I love I just wanted to party with him. I don't know what it is, but when I watch a movie, I always think about who I would hang out with.
Yeah.
And it always just seems to be, like, the most, like, laid-back person.
True.
Well, it was funny because I loved how he kept talking about money. The dude never really got that upset about anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but it was still believable. There were some really cool scenes with him. I love it when he can, like, incinerated the shit out of
Ash.
He reduced Ash to ash.
I love us, my friend.
Dude. But no, I mean, he was a great character. You know, you hate to see him go.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too, is we talked about how this movie's not very graphic. You also don't really see much of the kills. There's a lot of cutaways. There's a lot of off-screen deaths. And that kind of stuff, you know, normally would irritate me, but I would still take it over, like, a bad CGI death. But I think in the frame of this particular film, it really works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it, obviously... Like, I didn't even think about it, you know what I mean? Like, as each kill was happening, or like, you know, or like you said, you see, like, Dallas, you know, when he goes, like, you just see, and it's over. You know?
That
like,
was a good jump scare, by the way, from you and the Xenomorph.
Yeah. That was pretty freaky, man. It was.
So I think we've kind of already done this, but we're going to get into it again. Talk about scenes we like and scenes we don't like. And I'm pretty sure there's probably hardly anything we don't like. But, Randy, I'll let you start, man. Scenes you like or don't like?
Probably my favorite scene was the approach to the alien ship and the, you know, when they're actually in the alien ship and seeing all the, like, crazy architecture of the ship. Scenes I don't like, I don't really have one. I mean, if I had to be, like, super picky, I didn't really get the end. What did the alien, like, barely make it onto the shuttle and then, like, just get wedged in that area? Like, what's preventing the alien from just busting out of there and going ape shit? That's what I... But it didn't bother me. I'm just being super picky because I have to think of something.
I feel like I might have an answer on that, but I'll save it for when I talk. So.
Okay. Well, oddly enough, that scene was my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Because you think she's getting away and she's free.
Yeah.
And
the cat is safe.
And then there he is. And so it's like... But the part that really got me, because it confused me quite a bit, was she sees the alien, he or she, it, is on the small shuttlecraft that she is on, and she straps herself into the chair, and I was so confused. Like, what is she doing? She's basically locking herself in with this alien, and so the part that plays out after that is quite ingenious.
It makes sense then.
It does. It clears up a lot of questions.
I thought you were getting mad because, you know, on the Enterprise, they didn't have seatbelts, at least for a while. So the fact that she could do that probably was like, spaceships don't have seatbelts.
Right.
They have anti-lock brakes on the Enterprise.
Keep your fluids filled.
They had a couple centuries to improve on
the design. You know, the crazy thing is, when you look at this movie, it takes place in the future. It's only 100 years from now.
Really?
It was like 2122 or some shit, something real close to that, and I'm like,
I feel it's pretty right on with what it would be like. It would be like giant barges that are just not aerodynamic at all, barely move through space, you know, at a crawl. I feel it's believable, man. Like, it really is. Yeah. I guess I don't so in my mind, she's trying to make her way to the shuttle. She sees the alien, freaks out, and turns around and goes and shuts the auto-destruct off. Tries to.
Yeah.
And that fails, and then she's like, shit! So she runs and decides to get on the shuttle anyway. What? Is that where she sees
the alien? She doesn't see the alien until she's on the shuttle, because the alien's on the shuttle already.
Okay.
And I'll go ahead and jump in with this. So I think, obviously, you know the answer of why she's strapped in because of the scene that follows.
Right.
But I think the reason the alien was there is because earlier in the movie, they were talking about, I wonder if climate control affects the alien. So I think that either they were making it either A, too hot, or B, too cold, and the alien was isolating in a corner wherever it was, you know,
was
hot
warm.
Or cold. Yeah. And I think that's why the alien stayed nuzzled up, almost like cocooned, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Or maybe it's one of those things where it's like hibernation. Maybe the alien was going to sleep for a period of time to just float away, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about...
It's just killed like six people.
She gets tired, bro.
Worked up. Yeah,
but,
dude.
No, I was thinking, like, if the alien is intelligent as it seems, I mean, it knows this is its chance to get away. It's trying to be quiet.
True. That's also true.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, I you remember, like, when it flat, like, she's slipping into the suit, and it just says the alien open its mouth, and the thing just comes out.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get that. Like, I was like, what is it doing? You know
the
what
alien
I mean? Like,
it had
freaky,
a boner
though.
In its mouth. It saw her in the
mouth.
That's
like.
What it was. Okay.
It is kind of what it looked like, yeah. But I think it's cool that they had that from the very beginning,
yes,
yeah. And it's not just one that came out in whatever movie it was with the iconic scene where it's like up in her face and it's like, you know, I think it's cool that they had that. Yeah. I think it's cool that they had that from the very beginning.
For sure. Well, let me tell you guys about my favorite scene, because it wasn't that scene you guys are talking about.
No,
it was the completely predictable chest bursting scene, because that was the only scene that I remembered from seeing it in theater back in the day. When I told you, you know, let's watch this movie, the cool thing is I'm kind of going in blind. I don't remember a lot except one thing. And when that scene was coming up, I was hoping she really didn't have an idea it was coming. And so I remember that it was a very disturbing and startling scene, because that scene it's shot so well. It's a very comforting setting. They're all gathered around, smiling, eating dinner, telling jokes. Like, you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
It feels like a safe place, kind of like Randy, like when you're
and
in bed under the covers,
so
nothing can get me.
Yeah, right.
Healthy. Like, he was back.
He survived.
They saved him.
They got the face hugger off.
Yeah.
And no, not so much. He's actually the first male to be impregnated that I know of. It's just too bad he couldn't rake in that dough, because that little xenomorph blessed through his chest. The blood went everywhere. And I like what you said, Randy, when you're talking about the actual alien. Like, you could laugh. It looks silly or whatever. But when I saw it, I was just like, that's some good practical work. That looked – and then it, like, runs across the table. I'm like, that's freaky.
Yeah. Yeah, the sound it makes and its little teeth.
Yeah.
You know? They should have just let Yefet Kodo. Now, of course, Ash would have stopped it or whatever. But they should have just let Yefet Kodo just grab him and stab him with the pin. Because I think he could have taken him at that point. Yeah, he's got a good 200 pounds on him. You know.
So we kind of touched base on the ending already. But, Randy, tell me your opinion. Like, how do you feel about the ending of the movie?
it's great. Yeah, I liked it. I think it was, I think it's perfect. I like that the cat made it.
Yes.
That's very important. I think it's great. I mean, I wouldn't change anything.
Okay. Yeah.
You know? I like that it's not, I like that they don't explain everything. I like that there's a lot that's left that you don't know. You know what I mean? That's kind of one, I hate it when they go into too much detail about stuff that needs to remain mysterious and intriguing, like the Borg, you know what I mean? And different things like that. Like, I love it that you, now I haven't watched the other ones, and I know that we learned a whole lot more about the aliens and their eggs and the face huggers and all that stuff. But I still, for the time, this was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, and I always like a good ending. I need a happy, solid ending. And I feel like it was. I mean, I know a lot of people died, but, you know, she still survived throughout the whole ordeal, which was kind of crazy. So, clearly she's in...
Well, of course you're happy with it. She survived. The cat survived. She killed the alien, and she gets to sleep for 6 weeks. I mean...
True.
You're a big napper.
We did talk about that. You were like, man, what would you do if you could sleep for 6 weeks? I'm like, I would love it.
I would love it.
That'd be amazing.
You know, that's a good point. Because so many horror movies, and I guess, I don't know if you would consider that a horror movie. I consider it a horror movie. But so many horror movies nowadays will end, and the person is safe, and then there's like a final like flash. It's like, oh, they're not safe. And then the movie ends. And it's like, that's just so easy to do. It's like you expect it. And it's like, no, I'm glad that it had a happy ending.
Yeah, and she gets to take a nice little break.
Well earned.
Right?
Well earned.
How about you?
I'm with you and I'm not with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we watched it a couple times. Mm-hmm. You know, we even went back and watched a little bit of the director's cut.
Yeah.
Just to kind of compare differences, because I felt like there might be a different ending. And even though I'm really fine with this ending, it definitely works. And I think audiences and, you know, were very satisfied with it. But I would have preferred... Maybe more of an, I mean, I'm sorry, but an ambiguous ending.
I get it.
Kind of like he said, but not completely.
Sure.
I would have taken it where she gets on the shuttle and everything is good, cat's safe, and then you know how the scene shows where we realize, holy shit, the alien is there?
Mm.
You know how, it's like you have to know what you're looking for. If you know the alien's there, like you've seen the movie and you're watching it again, you recognize the shape of the head. You're like, he's turned around. But when you're watching the movie, you don't realize that alien's there until it moves, right?
Till the arm.
Right. And see, for me, I would have preferred an ending where, yes, it's all good, but us as an audience, as a viewer, notices the alien's there and she doesn't. And then she just does her sign-off, and it leaves you with that cold, what's going to happen, hence the sequel. I know, but that's my preference.
No, I think that's... Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, because it doesn't... I feel like when they do the ending like that, they go so far, it's like, okay, that person obviously got killed after the movie was over. And no, I like the complete ambiguity of that. You know what I mean? And... I agree. That would be
cool. I think
cool,
what
man.
It is, and I watch corny stuff. You guys can see some of the movies behind me, but I wasn't taken out of it, and I wouldn't talk negative about this movie, but, you know, the end scene where the alien gets shot out and then retracts back because the spear gun's stuck in the door, and he's kind of, like, floating outside the ship, and I'm like, that is realistic and corny as hell at the same time, and I would have, you know, think about how cool this would have been to do the ending I've explained. And that's a wrap. Credits roll, and people are like, shit. But in Hollywood, they already know they're doing a sequel, so they plan a sequel that picks up right where that leaves off, and you see what happens.
Sure.
Where she does defeat the alien, you know what I mean? Put that battle in the beginning or something like that. That's what I would have done.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Either way, it's still a great movie. And like you said, Randy, you dropped the bomb already. This movie is 42 years old.
Wow.
You just watched it for the first time. No, that's great, man. You did your research. Yeah. But the question is, how do you feel it holds up?
Oh, wonderfully, man. I mean, better than any other 40-ish year old movie for me personally. I don't know. So often, like if I watch the motion picture, right? If I watch Star Trek, the motion picture, there's parts of it where I'm like, man, that looks kind of cheesy. You know what I mean? You know, if I watch Star Wars is pretty good. That's what, 77? Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty damn good. I'm just thinking in terms of practical, if like the effects, you know, like if they did blue screens and green screens or whatever, you know, whatever, all that shit. I think it's fantastic, man. I wouldn't change anything about it. And I think the more so than those other two movies, which again, my frame of reference is not anywhere near yours because you're way into those classic movies. But like, the way the camera, the way the footage looks, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. The graininess, it just totally contributes to everything else that sets the atmosphere in the movie and makes it just, it's like Evan said, it's pretty damn perfect, you know?
It is.
I wouldn't change anything about that fucking movie, you know? I think it's really good, man.
It's a time capsule. So.
Yeah, and I agree. I know earlier when you said it was 42 years old, I kind of took a step back and thinking, what? Really? Because it doesn't feel like it's 42 years old. It feels older, probably because it is practical effects and most movies don't do that now, but I can't believe it's that old.
I mean, it's groundbreaking for the time, for sure. I mean, that's the reason why it freaked Evan out when he was a kid, man.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, dude. Like, maybe the only other movie from back then that I find as impactful would be The Exorcist. That's about the only one I can think of. Yep. And I won't even watch that movie anymore. Like, that movie jacked with me. Like, I can't sleep after I watch that
great
movie. You know, but anyway, like, so well done. And they just don't make stuff like that anymore. At least to me, I could be wrong. But, like, major motion pictures, I can't think of one I've seen in recent years where I'm like, I'd put it up against that, you know?
Yeah, agree. What do you think?
So, 42 years, yeah, damn right the movie holds up. It's still, to this day, it's like, okay, so Randy mentions The Exorcist. To a lot of people, The Exorcist is still one of, if not the best horror movie of all time.
It's terrifying.
People won't have the tape in their house. They won't watch it again. All these things. There's all these things about it. And Aliens right there, where when you think of, I think, like you said, so many movies now, like that movie set the standard that it's a frame of reference for what you can do with an extraterrestrial horror film.
Yes.
And I feel like anybody who uses that as a blueprint is going to get it done right. And of course this movie holds up because it didn't do anything to date itself. And I know Evan hates that word, but it's a 70s horror movie that still feels like the future. If you can accomplish that, dude, you got gold, man. And so, absolutely, it stands the test of time. And I look forward to several rewatches and the sequels until they get to the most recent stuff, because I think even then, I think some of the computer stuff gets involved. But it's been a long time. I know Alien Resurrection had its issues, but I still loved the characters in all the movies, and it's always cool to see Ripley. So,
yes.
So there's Aliens, and then there's Alien 3. You said 4. Right. Is it called Alien 4?
Alien Resurrection is the fourth one.
Mm. Okay. Okay, and then after that was all, like, the crossover AVP and stuff like that.
Two of those.
Yeah. Okay. And then they did Prometheus and Covenant.
Right, in that order. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, not to you know, totally go in a rabbit hole, but probably the most engrossing Aliens experience I had growing up was, I don't know if you ever played the Alien 3 game they probably had it on Sega, because I know you were a Sega guy.
Sega.
I had it on Super Nintendo. Dude, and it was really good, man. It was hard.
Yeah.
But I actually played it not all that long ago. It's a really good game, dude. The graphics are freaking awesome. And, like, all the weapons and just the aliens and, like, what you're doing. It's really well done, dude. And it's funny because when you lose, it has that game over, man.
No.
And, like, I didn't know where that came from. And I always just thought it was, like, the when you would die and it shows this xenomorph, like, drooling. And it's just this doom-laden music. And then it's like, game over, man. I was like, where is that coming from?
Kind of Super Nintendo guy is this. Actually, you mentioned something I already told you, but I got to touch base. You talked about, like, the teeth of the alien and the saliva coming out.
Yeah.
Do you know, to get that effect, they actually just tore up condoms? and used it in Alien's mouth. Yeah. Ugh. Hey, you got to use what you had in 79, man. Like they were still on the outskirts of the 60s and partying up.
Yep.
Hell yeah. I mean, I heard there was a lot of KY jelly involved, too. See, like, if you just look at it, everything's just dripping in KY jelly. When I was reading about the practical effects, because I got into this, man, when I was reading about the practical effects, the when the android, they tore his head off, they used the combination of, like, milk, caviar, like, some other stuff. And when you look at the innards of the android, it's like, ew.
Gross.
That's nasty. And why is he, like, coughing up, like... You know, why does he, like, look like he ate a bunch of Alka-Seltzer or something?
It's intimidation.
It's so gross.
Oh, man.
I like the way his voice sounded when he started talking after.
Oh, yes.
They brought him back, you know? Oh, man.
His head's on the table. That's so cool when they do that. Like, we all know the guy's hunched under the table, but it's done so well.
Cool.
Well, yeah, because they, like, position his head, and they put in a couple of extra shots of it, so it feels like they were there the whole time.
Right.
But, that's awesome, man, and it's such a good episode. I love talking about this stuff, but I think more than anything, my favorite thing is talking about my guests, and it's really cool to get you on here, man, and, you know, I already said you're one of my favorite people in the world. I'm really excited that you, you're going to come visit here in a few, but, you know, for anybody that maybe is tuning in because they just like the movie Alien, and they're getting introduced to you for the first time, tell us about Randy, and tell us about Here on Mars.
I'm Randy. My main online persona is Here on Mars, and it's just a solo musical project that I started probably back, I think I started late 2017, maybe, or so, and I've put out, probably four-ish records now of varying lengths. I'm about to put out a full length. It's called Align, which is the German word for alone. And, like, all of the songs focus on, like, focus on some aspect of either loneliness or being solitary or being... And that's kind of what Here on Mars is all about. I'm kind of a grumpy, curmudgeonly, you know, 40-year-old who increasingly doesn't recognize the planet he's living on every day. And that's kind of, like, the whole aspect of the music. And plus, it's that space thing, too. I love space. And space does feature somewhat heavily on this record. I think you're really going to like it. You can find me at hereonmars.org, but that'll point you to my Bandcamp page where you can find all the music. All of the music is free digitally still. I made it free when we started going through the whole COVID nonsense because I just wanted people to be able to, like, download it. And there's also this weird apocalyptic streak in me that's like, if for some reason we suffer some massive loss of connectivity, there's some part of me that laughs thinking, oh, well, maybe me encouraging these handful of people to go and download all my music and they can't stream anything on Spotify right now, all they're going to have to listen to is the music that I just begged and pleaded them to download. There's some part of me that finds that hilarious. But that's all still free. It's going to remain free for the time being. The new CD is available for pre-order. You can get a physical CD or you can just buy a digital version for $5. And so it's rock, electronic music. I feel like I'm doing something somewhat unique. And, you know, I'm just trying to find the few people out there that I can that like it and enjoy it. And, Dave, when I went to your Twitter page today, man, and saw that you had my tweet pinned from March, I was like, dude, it's not like I don't go look at your timeline now and then either or see your tweets. But for some reason, I just never saw that before. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to cry. You know, so I looked and I appreciate
it. Yeah, man, it's, you know, we talk about being friends and then being brothers and stuff and being real close. And, you know, I go out and I tell the world, and I'm 100% honest, that my favorite musicians are Rob Zombie and Here on Mars. And you guys are completely different. You accommodate two different mindsets and moods that I have. But I find myself listening to more of Here on Mars because I'm not as pissed off. Rob Zombie's kind of my pissed off, gonna mess some shit up mode. But the thing is your music is like sci-fi. It's an escape. You have a kick-ass voice, and I love the way that you're a one-man band, dude, and then the stuff you guest on when you do, like, Blue Black Silver and then Nocturnal, dude. The stuff is so good, like the albums, you know, Path of Totality, everything from Back to Native to the Void. But you might have yourself an alien hole, because I don't know if you'll ever be able to beat my personal favorite, which is Apocalypse Electro Rock.
Yes.
Dude, that freaking album gets me from 0 to 100 really quick.
I'm so happy to hear that. I think that album, it's funny because Johnny likes Native to the Void. I think Evan prefers Apocalypse Electro Rock too. But that one is like, there's like a heavy, angry, kind of desolate vibe that I think, it's funny because I think this new one is going to kind of scratch that little itch. Mm. But it also has some of the more kind of poppy, dancey stuff that I think Johnny kind of favors a little more than the heavier stuff. And it's funny that you say that, like, I feel it's a sci-fi sound. That's what I'm going for. But I hear it and I hear anger. Mm. Because I'm just, in general, I'm just an angry person. You know what I mean? And I don't know, man. I just really appreciate the hell out of you guys listening to it, enjoying it, telling me you listen to it and enjoy it. I mean, that just keeps me going, man. Because people struggle, dude, with when you're making music, it's hard to get people's attention. Somebody investing their time is almost more like of an investment than their money. You know what I mean? Anybody can part with a few bucks just to, like, you know, hey, cool, dude, good for you, here's some money. You know what I mean? But to spend your time and listening to it, that's huge, dude. So I appreciate it.
Hell yeah, man. And anytime I get a chance to, I put it on my pinned tweet because it comes from the heart, because there are times where I'm getting up for work and then the sun's coming up and I'll listen to Apocalypse Electro Rock or anything else that I'm really feeling for that day. And the music just kind of goes with the mindset, the mood of what is today going to bring? What is today going to be like? You know, and that's one of my favorite things, too.
Sure.
The exploration, the not knowing, you know what I mean? The journey itself. And the way I try to share that is, I do the social media thing, but when I talk to people, man, I'm a movie guy. But is anybody who trends that music, I'm like, what do you listen to? And then it's so funny because I'll get a weird look from people. They're like, oh, I listen to rock, I listen to rap, I listen to pop, whatever it is, country, and then we stop talking. But whatever it is, they'll say something, and I'll be like, that's cool, do you like sci-fi? And they don't realize I'm still talking music, right?
All right.
They're like, And I'm like, you should check out this dude. His name's Here on Mars. Like, okay. I'm like, well, you can stream it. Like, it's on Spotify and, you can find it. But it's cool, man, because it's got, I think it has everything you just mentioned, but in a sci-fi realm. And people have told me they've checked it out and they dig it. I've even had people at work who have had to work with me for the day. Like, I'll train or I'll do something, and I'll put that on.
Wow.
And they'll kind of just be like, what is this? And I'm like, I'm so glad you asked. Let me tell you about this. And
That's
cool, man.
It's to know that someone is out there like being like, yeah, you should listen to this. That's insane to me, dude. I can't even like process it. You know what I mean? But other than gratitude, but maybe I should. Maybe you have a point. Maybe I should just start calling it sci-fi music, because everything kind of comes back to that in one form or fashion. Yeah, sci-fi is just the bomb, dude. Like, period. Sci-fi horror is even better,
Well, we'll keep that in mind for future episodes. But, man, honestly, it was nothing short of just love, man, for having you on the show. We were looking forward to the episode, but having just did the episode, I'm like, damn, that was a good time.
It was.
And it's just like, let's not wait so long to do it again.
Agree.
No. Let's just figure out when you want to do it. I don't care if it's another month. Just if you want to do it in a month, if you want to do it in 2 months, whatever, man. Let's do it. And, Julie, I knew I'd like you. I knew I'd really like you. I knew that was and when I get down there with my wife and son, I know she's gonna love you too. The second I heard the story of how you guys met and everything, I'm like, okay, this is right on.
Yes,
so
I know. Yeah. And it was so good to finally get to meet you, so
Back at you, for sure. For sure. Thank you.
And there you have it, 1979 Alien, featuring me, you, and Here on Mars. What'd you think?
I loved it, as I do every time. I mean, I always have so much fun on here.
Yeah, but this time we got to talk about people getting murdered by aliens.
Well, alien.
Oh, you're right. Damn, you got me.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was nice to get to talk with Randy, too. I've listened to his music a lot, but have not had
you're welcome.
A chance to talk with him. So that was fun. It was a nice change.
It is a nice change. And, you know, I always tell people, as we mentioned in this episode, that the reason I love doing the podcast is to introduce people to these movies, mm-hmm. sometimes for the first time, and to, you know, just talk about things, and people are like, man, that does sound awesome. I will check that out. But I gotta be honest, I think equally the other reason that I've discovered was just the connections that we have with everybody. It's like you said, it's so great to get together with the community and find common interests and just have a lot of fun, because half the time we're just kind of shooting the breeze, and the other half of the time we're talking about a movie that we equally have, you know, passion about.
Absolutely. And I love another point of view as well, and so especially Randy on this one, I think he fell in love with this movie, so so having his point of view and just seeing it through his eyes, it actually made me enjoy the movie more because of what he had to say about it. So
it was kind of like a taste of our own medicine, so
it
to speak, because we really liked the movie, but I think he liked it more than we did.
We
had to put it in order of who liked it the most, but again, him coming across as passionate as he was, like, really excited us.
It did.
So if the monster didn't work, his energy level did. See?
That's right.
And that's usually what I have to do. I'm like, what are you talking? Casablanca is a great movie. Come on. You know,
yeah, just drink five monsters and it'll be an ace.
You'll understand. But no, this it's so cool because I can't wait to see how the rest of the franchise treats him. He's a lot like you, where he remembered Aliens much more than Alien. And so it's going to be cool for both of you guys to rewatch that movie and see how much of it you remember, but also you remember liking it then. Do you like it as much now? And does it compare to the original? Because adult you may go, the original was a more sophisticated film. Or you may be like, nah, sequel definitely was better. So that'll be interesting. Because I think the world says that the second one is their favorite, and then the first one's like a close contender. But
yeah, but I typically disagree with the world as far as movies go.
Hey, it's like I always say, tomato, tomato, no onion.
Yeah. I know, when we have the tomato meter and we're looking at it, usually if it's really high, then I don't like the movie, but if it's really low, then I do, so...
Oh, so you're a Troma fan. I love that about you. Yeah. When do we go get together and get traumatized?
I know. We need to do another Troma.
Maybe we'll give Jenny a call and, you know, this summer.
Hey, that would be fun. We should.
Gotta keep getting you meeting everybody.
I know. This has been fun. That's probably my favorite thing of doing this podcast, is getting to meet everyone. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And now you've got to converse with everybody in the Trek Talk group.
Yay! I have.
And then, you know, talking about what we got down the road, we've mentioned that we're opening up now and putting out episodes every 2 weeks if possible, which the way it's looking, definitely possible, because Dave be getting bored and needing a podcast. Julie be taking those trips and working them hours, and, you know, I got to do something. You know, I can't just sit on my ass and watch Crocodile every day.
I
could. For the longest time I have. But it's fun to look down the road and see what we have coming out. And so...
Yes.
This next episode is going to be really cool because we are stepping out of the sci-fi realm and we're stepping into the family-friendly fantasy realm. And we're going to bring on another familiar face, but for the first time this year.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about a classic nostalgic film that we all love, and it'll be interesting to see if it holds up.
That's true. I look forward to it.
So, any final thoughts on Alien or sci-fi horror?
I love it.
What'd you call me? Sci-fi horror. Oh.
Sci-fi horror.
I might be a sci-fi horror if I look at sci-fi porn as much.
True. No.
I know, I just kind of paused like, did I rat myself out?
Oh.
You're like spaceships more than I do.
I do. I love it. I love some sci-fi, and you're definitely getting the horror. building that.
Yeah, and there's so many different kinds of horror movies that there's something out there for everyone. And, you know, you find what you like and you find what you don't like and you explore more of the stuff you do like. And there's so many sub-genres of the horror genre that, sci-fi horror is just one of them.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've introduced you to the so bad it's good. I've introduced you to the it's bad but I like it. You know what I mean? And you've seen, you know, there's the religious horror. There's the serial killer horror. There's supernatural. The list goes on and on and on. Trauma is its own category, you know.
Water horror.
Water horror. See, I believe anything in water is terrifying.
I know you do.
Captain Ron is terrifying.
No.
I joke.
Really?
Yeah, but seriously, you ain't getting me on there. You know, ironically enough, just as it sounded like we were about to wrap up this episode, just keeping with the water element, we were talking about the idea of taking a cruise. And I was like, well, the only time that I would take a cruise would be if it's like that Star Trek cruise or the Turner Classic Movie cruise, right? Like, totally makes sense for me.
Yes.
And you're like, I would like to go on a cruise. I'm like, cool, here's your best chances of getting me on a cruise.
Yep.
And so I started looking at, you know, availability, booking, traveling. The world's opening up. It's getting great again. And then I started looking at prices, and I'm like, huh. I don't know why I anticipated this being a lot cheaper.
Right. Yeah.
Are cruises just for rich people?
Oh, I've never been on one. I thought there were more reasonably priced cruises, but maybe those are the ones that are not cool, like Star Trek.
That's right. Yeah, we're not. This ain't no Disney cruise. All right, we're not taking no Alaskan cruise. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. We're trying to go to a place beyond the pattern of stars.
Yeah, we want to go to space.
That's right. Because she loves spaceships, and I can't get her on a spaceship because those are even more expensive. But if I can get her on a crew liner ship, that's some kind of ship.
That is a ship. You're right.
All right, I'm gonna throw this out there.
Okay.
All the Star Trek fans are going to go crazy right now because they've wondered this same question. And I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, no. Okay.
All right. We're on the Star Trek cruise ship.
Yeah.
You're getting to kick it with all the stars of Star Trek. You don't drink. I don't drink.
No.
But we have the ability to drink. Sure. Anybody could. You have to do a shot with somebody. Who do you do shots with from Star Trek?
100% Quark. I mean, that was an easy question.
That Ferengi is going to drink you under the table.
They're going to go into the holosuites.
Hey, whoa.
Not like that.
What do you think the holosuites are?
There's a baseball in there. I haven't got to the fun episodes yet. But
I was like, this ain't the holodeck. This is the holosuite. Like, there's only one reason why it's sweet.
Oh, isn't that where they go and play like the baseball and...
I don't know who's telling you what, but we haven't even got to those episodes, maybe, so stop looking ahead.
Okay, sorry.
All right. But I knew that about you. I knew you were going to say Quark. Part of me was thinking you might say Dax, just kind of like the girls, you know. But
she's
I know
always hanging out with Quark, so
oh, two for one, yeah. The Ferengis.
What about you? Who would you do a shot with?
I don't know. I was prepared to ask you that question, but I wasn't prepared to answer the question myself. For some reason, I didn't put much thought into it. Like I said, it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. Cisco's the shit, no doubt. Man, it was so awesome.
Oh, I know who it would be.
Who are you going to say?
O'Brien.
See, my guilty answer was right away. It was Miles O'Brien.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Isn't he like Scottish or something? Someone out there. I'm sorry, I'm getting it wrong. He's definitely one of those places. So he might easily drink me under the table because that's like water to some of these folks, you know? So I don't know if I can hold my own with O'Brien, but assuming O'Brien was busy, because I do feel like that's an easy answer for me.
Oh, sure.
And for some reason, I hate to say this because I'm such a Miles O'Brien fan, but I don't know if he'd be fun to drink with.
That's fair.
In real life. I don't know if
picture,
that. If,
yeah.
He's, I would totally do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you said Cisco.
Let's say he's not on the cruise.
Yeah, he's not on the cruise. That's right.
He didn't get to make it.
He's repairing the ship. You know,
that's right.
I could throw some back with Cisco, but hell, even he's up there in age now.
That's true.
Some of these guys. And it's funny, too, because, you know how I'm like, you can do shots with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I literally pictured the actor, Armin, whatever. In the Quark outfit, like they're not dressed.
I wouldn't,
but
do a
it's
shot
so
with the actor.
He has to be Quark.
Nah. Just kidding.
All of a sudden, I come to check on you two, and you got Ferengi ears on. Julie, you look different.
My ears grew a little bit.
They're red.
Oh, no. Well, maybe you talked about the age thing. What about Jake?
Yeah, that would be a lot more in line. Yeah. Yeah, I think Jake would be a pretty good answer. But yeah. I'm going to flip it because we're just talking about DS9 characters.
I know.
I think I would. It'd be cool to throw some shots back with Jonathan Frakes, Will Riker.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be really cool.
I could see that.
But hey, I wouldn't turn anybody down.
True. Well, anyone.
So, yeah, we got to talk about it, guys, because we can't afford to go. So that's about as close as we're going to get. Those prices were insane. And then the crazy thing is the Turner Classic Movie Cruise was even more expensive than that. And I got it figured out.
That's nuts to me.
It may be nucking futs, but I got it figured out. Check it out.
What?
Nerds are usually rich.
Okay.
So Star Trek folks got money. That's why that's expensive. Plus, okay. Star Trek is a license, right?
I'll buy it.
Turner Classic Movie people usually ain't 30-something-year-olds like ourselves.
True.
It's usually empty nesters, retirement plans, seasoned people who have money that could go to Paris and buy shoes, you know what I mean?
Right.
Instead, they go on this cruise.
Yeah.
And so, it is what it is.
You know, it is. But that's okay. One day.
One day.
Put that on our bucket list.
There it is. It's definitely on my bucket list. Oh, man. So, I think this is definitely a fun episode. I look forward to many more episodes. And, you know, thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes.
We do this for you, and we do it for us. But I think more than anything else, we just, if one person out there listens and it's like, man, I can't wait for their next episode. I love this show. That's enough for us to keep doing it. So
absolutely.
I mentioned that we take listener requests. Nobody's hit me up, and that's cool because I know there's so many great podcast episodes to listen to. But if you happen to hear this and you want to hear Julie and I cover something, or if you want to be a guest on a show, hit us up on Twitter. You know where to find us, @Dave_Phantom.
@AJoyfulJulie.
And we'll take those recommendations. We're pushing this stuff out every 2 weeks. And with that being said, stay tuned for the next episode of Terrible Terror, and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah.
Thanks as always for listening to this bonus podcast from the Podcast from Another World. Don't forget to check out the SIP network, sipnet.us, where you can find podcasts for many different types of podcasts that you might want to listen to, from motivational podcasts to lists to people just kind of shooting the shit to basically almost anything that you can think of within the realm of the podcasts that are listed. And don't forget, the next episode of the Terrible Terror podcast will be on Silent Hill Revelations. So, thank you guys once again for listening, and take care of yourselves and each other.